Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the meeting of the Research and Innovation Legal and Legislative Affairs Committee. The meeting is called to order, and I will be filling in for Chairman Veronica Herrero. Today, I'm the Vice Chair, Rita Athus. Rachel, would you please call the roll?
Committee Vice Chair Athus?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Here.
Trustee John Butler?
Here.
Board Chair Montel Gales? Trustee Tim Moore?
Here.
Trustee Leland Strom?
Here.
Board Chair Eric Wazowitz?
I'm not board chair anymore, but...
I'm sorry, Trustee Eric Wazowitz.
And I am here.
And Committee Chair Veronica Herrero, who is absent. Thank you.
Mr. Perry, would you please confirm that the appropriate notice of this meeting has been provided and that we have a quorum present?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Appropriate notice has been provided pursuant to the Illinois Open Meetings Act, and you have a quorum present this morning.
Okay, thank you. Then the first item on the agenda is meeting agenda approval. May I have a motion to approve the agenda as proposed?
So made, Strom.
Trustee Strom, second?
Second, Moore.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? The agenda is approved. And now could I have a review and approval of the minutes of February 15th, 2024? Motion to approve?
So moved, Wazowitz.
Second?
Second, Barsima.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? The minutes are approved.
Don't we have to verbalize our
verbalize
approval?
It.
Oh.
All
yeah.
in favor.
It doesn't say that.
So all in favor.
Oh, all in favor.
Aye.
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 Thank you. I want to welcome any University Advisory Committee representatives present today. Do you have any comments?
Thank you. Just an acknowledgement and an appreciation to Dr. Harris for her work in bringing in research and innovation funds for the university and for the use of the faculty. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? I'd like to just make a few opening comments to the meeting. First of all, I'm glad to be here today with all of you at our May RILA committee meeting. We have many updates and interesting things to share with you all. I would like to begin by acknowledging the outstanding work that continues throughout our Office of Sponsored Programs Administration, Associate Vice President for Research, Executive Director of Sponsored Programs, Daryl Little, continues to lead NIU through increased proposals and award funding from both the state and federal sides. As we see from her detailed written report, there is much to be excited about as we move into the next quarter. And I want to say personally, I love reading those reports, and I'm always astounded by the amount of grants that are contained in there. Very, very impressive. Throughout our meeting today, we will hear about the research and success stories NIU faculty, staff, and students share. Vice President Harris will talk about the amazing work happening in the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology with junior faculty that may lead to life-saving efforts, which affect millions who suffer from heart-related illness and disease. We will learn about new ideas and how we are revising what we previously knew about rock formations, along with important research and discovery from an NIU assistant professor of geology. We will also highlight efforts from two entrepreneurial undergraduate and graduate students who received an award for an innovative mobile app that monitors drowsiness and driving. At least it doesn't do billboards when you're driving while driving. While we're on the subject of innovation and new ideas, we will hear more about artificial intelligence and how it connects to NIU and higher education. It's important to share that at the base of all these wonderful initiatives is the hard work and research that NIU faculty and students continue to engage with while bringing partners and other groups into the fold. I look forward to hear more about these from Vice President Harris and our presenter, David Gunkel. Now we're open for public comments. We recognize members of the public who have complied with state law and Board of Trustees bylaws by registering their written request to address the board with our parliamentarian. Mr. Perry, have you received any timely requests to address this meeting?
We do not have any public comment this morning.
Okay, thank you. And at this point, I would like to ask Vice President for Research and Innovative Partnerships, Yvonne Harris, for news items and comments.
Thank you. I would like to acknowledge another strong, at least turn that on. I would like to acknowledge another strong quarter of research funding as noted in the Sponsored Programs Administration report submitted to the board. NIU's sponsored awards continues its upward trend in funding with 47 sponsored awards totaling $7.2 million. Cumulative activity for FY 2024 is 219 sponsored awards, resulting in $28.5 million of funding. Distribution of awards is $13.5 million for research, $6.8 million for instruction, and $8.1 million for other sponsored activities. With respect to research, this represents a 17% increase in funding compared to the same period last year. As noted in the report, projections suggest that NIU remains on target to meet or exceed FY 2023 federal and state sources of sponsored funding levels of $61 million. More information and details are provided in the sponsored program's written report. I also want to share with the board that NIU faculty continues to be recognized for its excellence in research and teaching. NIU Assistant Professor Jifu Tan, faculty in the Department of Mechanical Engineering in the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology, recently received a career grant for his work studying blood clotting. This award is NSF's highest honor in support of junior faculty who exemplify the role of teacher scholars through outstanding research, excellence education, and the integration of education and research. Clots, aiding in stopping bleeding, can also obstruct blood flow in vessels, leading to cardiovascular diseases like hypertension, heart attack, and stroke, and is the leading cause of death worldwide. Understanding clot formation and its response in live blood environment is crucial for predicting and preventing treating clot growth and saving lives. Over the next 5 years, Dr. Tan will focus his research on developing models that advance the understanding of clot formation and rupture, also known as embolism. Using powerful computers and artificial intelligence, Dr. Tan will seek to better predict clot growth and its response to the pulsation of blood flow, collisions from blood cells, and vessels dilation. There is no question that NIU faculty consistently stay on the cutting edge of research with innovations that lead to the creation of new knowledge. This is evident in the research of Assistant Professor of Geology, Dr. Suzanne Autry-Mulligan. Dr. Autry-Mulligan is seeking to better understand the relationship between rock formations and the ages of the Grand Canyon landscapes, using new tools to resolve pressure variations in mid-crustal 1.7 billion year old rocks from the upper granite gorge of the Grand Canyon. Dr. Autry-Mulligan has provided evidence supporting the reevaluation of the tectonic history of the Precambrian rocks that form the basement of the canyon. This new data and knowledge will provide new insight and fuel new research into the formation of the Earth itself. She sees the Grand Canyon and other natural wonders as ancient history books waiting to be decoded. She states that just like we have museums for understanding human history, I'd like to think of the national parks as our best public access to the Earth's history. Dr. Autry-Mulligan plans to continue working on rocks from the middle crust of the Earth, and her current project is in the desert Southwest. I would also like to acknowledge the launching of Girls Who Code at NIU on March 6th. Katie Erdman, with the assistance of Federico Bassetti in the Office of Innovation, hosted a launch of the NIU Girls Who Code College Loop in the 71 North Partnership Studio. NIU is proud to have an affiliate chapter of the College Loops Initiative, in which we are helping lead the movement to inspire, educate, and equip young women with the computing skills to pursue 21st century opportunities. This global nonprofit organization is dedicated to closing the gender gap in technology. It leads efforts to motivate, teach, prepare young women with the coding skills necessary for success in the modern world. Since the launch event, the chapter has experienced significant traction and has grown to over 40 members in just a few weeks. The rapid growth of College Loop demonstrates the demand and enthusiasm for such networks at NIU. This initiative aligns with our commitment to diversity, inclusion, social mobility, particularly in the technology field, and we anticipate that the chapter will continue to thrive and positively impact the community. Finally, I cannot say enough about our student entrepreneurs. I want to again acknowledge Katie Erdman, a master's student in data analytics, along with Nikhail Dodiga, an honors college student and sophomore in computer science, for placing second in the De La Vega pitch competition for a business idea called Drowsy Driver. This idea is a market record ready mobile app that monitors a driver's hands, eyes, and seatbelt to detect signs of drowsiness, such as prolonged eye closure or hands dropping from the wheel. As a result of their work, Katie was invited to become a member of the 17th cohort of WMN Tech Founders, which was created by a community of 1871 employees and members to promote inclusion, equity, allyship across all levels of 1871 and support women entrepreneurs. Nikhail, a finalist in the 1871 Tech Challenge 2024, started Husky Hackers, a student organization for coders that intend to participate in national hackathons. Thank you for this opportunity to share the excellent innovation work of our faculty and students engaged in research, scholarship, and artistry at NIU.
Thank you so much, Vice President Harris, and it's so good to see that the diversity of our innovation and science projects matches the diversity of our student body. So thank you very much. We'll now move to the university reports. Agenda item 7A, state legislative report, and I believe that Dr. Streb is going to give that in lieu of Mrs. Davidson.
Good morning, trustees. Katie unfortunately had a flight delay and isn't able to be with us, so I will be brief because we are in the eye of the hurricane. I was down in Springfield earlier this week. It's eerily quiet. What I can tell you, since we've last met with you, NIU appeared before both the House and Senate appropriation hearings or committees, which is always a good time. I think our hearing went well. In Katie's write-up, you can see that on April 9th, the Senate Higher Education Appropriations Committee held a subject matter hearing on the Commission on Equitable Public Funding, University Funding recommendations. Actually, as we speak right now, there's a subject matter hearing in the House. I don't know how that hearing has gone yet. I'll get a briefing on that very soon. I would be surprised if we see action taken in this session, because we're getting down to the last couple weeks of session, but certainly anything is possible. The other thing I want to point out very quickly is regarding the budget. The information that we're hearing on the budget right now is that revenue is generally stable. I'm a little bit concerned that some of the governor's proposed revenues for the next fiscal year may not come to fruition. But we do, it does look, I'm not hearing anything, let's put it this way, inconsistent with us getting the 2% increase. I don't know that it'll be likely it'll be any more than that, but based on what I'm hearing when I was down in Springfield, I think there's a good possibility we'll hit that 2%. So I will stop there and certainly happy to answer any questions anybody has.
Are there any questions or discussions for Dr. Strobe? Dr. Strobe, the only when you talked about concerns about some of the revenue projections, is there anything in particular that your concern might not be coming in?
He's put forward some revenue generating proposals that have not necessarily received support from the legislature yet. So they're working through that, I think, right now, and we'll see where that comes. I will say that there's good news and bad news in this, right? The April revenue came in as projected, which on the one hand is good because you don't want it to be less than projected. On the other hand, last year we got kind of an April surprise. There was no April surprise this year. So I do think, again, based on everything that I'm hearing, I would be surprised if we don't get to 2%, but obviously we're in the eye of the hurricane. If you talk to a lot of legislators right now, they will tell you, I don't have much more information than you have. This will happen very quickly in the last couple of weeks of session.
You never know what's going to happen in Springfield, so it's good to be prepared.
I will say that I was told that they always try to get out the last couple of years a little bit early. Mm-hmm. They were told to cancel whatever plans they had because they believe they will come back after Memorial Day to finish up the budget this year, so we'll see.
Are there any other questions or discussions? If not, we'll move to agenda item 7B, the Federal Relations Report, and I believe Ms. Julie Rao is going to give that virtually.
Yes, hi everyone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see all of you. I want to just start with an update on MISA NIU advocacy up on Capitol Hill. NIU faculty participated in the Coalition for International Education's Advocacy Day to highlight NIU's Center for Southeast Asian Studies and increase funding for international education programs within Title VI. But we also had faculty and staff participate in the Hispanic Association of Colleges and Universities annual meeting and advocacy day to discuss NIU status as an emerging HSI and continued federal investments in Title III and Title V funding. On March 12th, President Freeman was in Washington, D.C., and she met with many members of the Illinois delegation to discuss her priorities and NIU. Shifting to an appropriations update, in March, Congress reached an agreement to fund the federal government for FY24, which we are about halfway through. Of programs of importance for us, and the National Science Foundation received a 5% cut, and NASA received about a 6% cut, and higher education campus-based programs received flat funding. If you remember, these programs were eliminated, slated for elimination in earlier House appropriations draft. And also in the FY24 budget, NIU received a congressionally directed community funding project for our LEAP program. I've been engaged with the Illinois delegation to advocate for increases across the federal government and our priority accounts for FY25 and to continue to support NIU's congressionally directed spending requests. On to the administration side, as you all know, FAFSA implementation continues to have issues, so I'll provide a really great update of where we are in giving our financial aid packages to students this spring. Gainful employment: on March 29th, the Department of Education delayed the implementation of gainful employment and value transparency regulations to October 1st of this year. Compliance remains concerns with the SBA, even with the extended timeline. On April 19th, the Department of Education released their long-awaited Title IX guidance. Among many changes, the rules expand language around actions that are prevents or severe and that limit or denies access to educational programs or activities. The rule also expands who can file a complaint under Title IX and who at the institution is a mandatory reporter to the Title IX or compliance office. It is increasingly unlikely that the Biden administration will release a rule on transgender student athletes' participation before the end of 2024. And I'm happy to answer any of your questions.
Are there any questions or discussions for Julie? Yes, Trustee Barsima?
No. Thank you for your report and for the work that you're doing for us in Washington. In terms of FAFSA, has there been any discussion that we're aware of in the event that the delay causes enrollment to be affected in a negative way, not just here at NIU, but across the nation? Has there been any, like what happened with the pandemic, where there was some relief funding given on a federal basis, has there been any discussion of any relief funding for FAFSA being available to universities that can prove that they were impacted by it?
There has not, at the federal level, a lot of relief due to enrollment, either slows or like a down in enrollment nationwide. There hasn't been any discussion of that.
Any other questions or discussion? And Julie, has there been any discussion about looking into what happened with FAFSA? Any congressional committees? Is anybody concerned about making sure that this doesn't happen again? I mean, is there discussions on Capitol Hill about that?
Yes, I believe Secretary Cardona has been to Capitol Hill, I want to say 3 to 4 times in the past 2 months, some for regular testimony defending the department's budget, but also specifically about FAFSA, and has been questioned extensively. I believe he was on the Hill earlier just this week addressing questions before both the House and Senate committees who have jurisdiction. Chairwoman Virginia Fox has also put out a statement there. The Congress is already looking to 2025, the next year's class, and making sure that FAFSA implementation that year is smooth as well. So Congress is really concerned about the FAFSA impact and making sure that the department executes FAFSA moving forward, you know, correctly, and that we don't see this again.
Have they asked for any testimony from students, universities on the issue?
Not at this stage.
Because I think we'd be ready.
Yeah. I think if Congress continues to hold investigations over fast implementation or additional hearings, they may look into, you know, speaking with practitioners and students of what the impact has been for them.
Okay, thank you. And the last question I have, and this might be for Vice President Harris or Dr. Friedman, with the cut to the National Science Foundation budget, how does that impact us, or do we know how that would impact us?
Okay, at this time, we don't know how it will impact mm-hmm. us. It's a conversation to have. Sorry. Yeah, we don't know how it will impact mm-hmm. us going forward. We hope that it will have a positive outcome, but at this time, we don't know.
And I would just add that other than the Department of Energy, the National Science Foundation is a major funder of our faculty and our graduate students. And a cut is never a good thing for us to see, because it means that it'll just be harder for them to compete for dollars.
Thank you. All right, and then we'll move to agenda item 7C, Sponsored Programs, Administrative Quarterly Report by Daryl Little. And I believe that's a written report. So are there any questions or discussions on that report? Okay, if not, we'll move to agenda item 7D, a faculty presentation. David, I'm gonna say this right, Gunkel. You get to come to the microphone.
So, good morning. I wanted to talk about generative AI in general, but I realize that's too big. So what I'm going to do is focus on large language models, because I think this is the one that gets most of the attention in higher education right now, and it's the one that we are most worried about in regards to the delivery of curriculum in our classrooms, with students and faculty having access to these very powerful tools. Well, I got to try to get this thing to work here. There we go. So what is a large language model? And I'm going to have to just move a little bit here so I can read it. A large language model is a type of artificial intelligence program that processes and generates human-like text based on patterns and examples it has learned from a vast amount of data. These models are designed to understand and respond to queries, complete sentences, or even generate content in a conversational, informative, or creative manner. Now, this is a pretty nice, concise definition of what a large language model is, and it should be, because I got it by generating it from a large language model. In this case, OpenAI's GPT series called ChatGPT. And the ChatGPT algorithm is not the only large language model out there. You may have heard of some other ones. Google has been competing against OpenAI for quite some time, and their most recent model is the BERT model. And the new kid on the block is Anthropic's Claude, which you also may have heard about as being a constitutional AI. These are not the only large language models. There are many more, but these are the ones that you may have heard about and the ones that are getting a lot of attention, mainly because they provide cloud access with a free account to lots of users. So the opportunities and challenges with large language models, as you probably have heard, is vast. And there are lots of things going on, both in terms of positive outcomes, but also in terms of negative concerns. So we have things like write original content, write computer code, take standardized tests, converse with users, machine translation, answer questions. Those are all things that people have pointed to as positive outcomes from large language models. On the other side, with the concerns on the impact this is going to have on society and in higher education in particular, we have challenges with education. Obviously, the teaching of writing is really where this comes to impact us very greatly. Questions regarding copyright, plagiarism, and academic integrity, which is something that we're all very concerned about. Disinformation, another one I heard when I was in the hallway, the mention of technological unemployment and the effect that's going to have on careers and the planning for careers of our graduates. Bias and prejudice, they learn the biases and prejudices in their training data. The training data comes from us, and guess what they learn? All the bad habits that we have encoded in our various documents. And something called platform capitalism. All of these models require vast resources and lots of money. Therefore, they are only able to be distributed and developed by multinational corporations, and they are in the business not of education, they are in the business of business. And therefore, there is some concern about profit and privacy and the use of personal data. But we can't talk about all of these, obviously. So what I want to do is focus on two in particular. I want to look at writing and the education process with writing, and then I want to look at copyright and academic integrity. So let's start with education and specifically looking at the role of writing in the higher education environment. And when we ask the question, what is the role of writing in higher ed, we've got to recognize that we use writing in two very different ways in our classrooms. We sometimes use writing as an end in itself. Other times, we use writing as a means to an end. And the challenges that are imposed on writing from large language models will look very differently depending on how we look at writing and its role in the classroom. So first, if we look at writing as an end, here we're thinking about things like dissertations, master's theses, presentations that students give at academic conferences, maybe journal publications, or even the development of apps. In this case, the product is what really matters. We want students to make a contribution to the existing literature, or we want students to make a contribution that can be patented or developed, and therefore, we're all about product. The process is important, obviously, but it's really the product. A student who does a dissertation but never produces a dissertation doesn't get the PhD, right? They've got to have the document that is the outcome. On the other hand, though, we often use writing as a means to an end. Here, writing is an evaluation mechanism. We use writing to evaluate student learning, student success, and student thinking and comprehension. Therefore, we ask students to write not because we want the product, but we want the process. We want to see how our students are absorbing the material, synthesizing new ideas, and thinking through problems. So here we have the things like the standard essay exam in the Blue Book that we used to give students. We have the term paper. We have the development of in-class coding examples. The goal here is not for us to get the student writing. We don't need more blue books. What we want to do is use the blue books to look at how the student is answering questions and thinking through a problem. Now, when we throw large language models into the mix, how does this get affected, and what does it mean for these two different ways of approaching writing? First, if writing is an end, then we want to cultivate critical users. We want our students to be able to use these new tools, but we want them to use it in ways that they're critical of their opportunities and their challenges. We want to develop best practices, and we want to help students cultivate best practices in their own writing process. And we want to do this, but we can't do it if we don't engage them. They have to have access, and they have to be engaged with the technology. And most importantly, faculty have to lead by example. We have to show students best practices. We have to show students the critical encounters with these technologies, not just tell them about it. They actually have to see us do it as a way of exemplifying the manner by which we want to engage these things. When writing is a means, we may need to think about ways of limiting student use of these tools in various circumstances. The same way we may have at one point limited access to calculators in the teaching of mathematics, we may need to think about ways of restricting in various very confined circumstances access to these technologies. But it also means we have to revise student evaluation mechanisms. The take-home essay exam is no longer viable, and we have to rethink what we do as instructors in our evaluation process to meet the realities of large language models as they are right now. Also, prohibition teaches nothing. Telling students thou shalt not gets us nowhere. We have to teach them the debate. There is a debate about large language models, but the answer is not don't use them. The answer is how can you use them? What is the best way to use them? And lastly, in order for this to be successful, faculty have to be confident in their technology. If faculty are not confident in their technology, they avoid it. And if they avoid it, they tell their students to avoid it. And we can't have that transpire with this new powerful technology. The next thing is copyright. Now, in order to get large language models to be able to do what they do, they must be trained on vast amounts of textual data. How much textual data? The entirety of the internet and every publicly available document that is out there in digital form. We are talking about massive amounts of data. This is why it's big data. But not all of this data comes in the same shape or form. Some text is public domain. Things like government documents, literary classics, publications with expired copyrights, these things are freely available and can be utilized by anyone. But there are also copyrighted content that is available in digital form. And these are publications that can only be used with permission and licensing agreements from the holder of the intellectual property. And you can see where all of this is coming together in the recent lawsuits brought by the New York Times and now eight other newspapers against OpenAI and Microsoft for training their large language model on what they allege is copyrighted content available on the internet. So the plaintiffs allege that OpenAI and Microsoft have used their proprietary content to train the large language model, and that this not only violates copyright protections, but facilitates the production of new content that will compete with the news organizations. OpenAI and Microsoft, for their part, have sought to get protection under the fair use exception in US copyright law, and have argued that if they have to pay the New York Times and these other newspapers for their content, it would make training their models prohibitively expensive and therefore impede the development of new innovation. Now for us, I think this is a little closer to home. If you have text that is generated by a large language model, who's the author? How do you cite it? Who owns the IP on AI-generated content? And right now, in answer to the question, can you copyright the content you make with generative AI, the Copyright Office in the US has said no. Generative content from an AI cannot be copyrighted. Therefore, an AI cannot be an author and cannot hold the IP over the content that it generates. Now, this sounds like a win for Team Human because we're the authors, the AI is just a tool, but it creates some problems. because IP protections and author identification rights for AI-generated work is now uncertain. And this has created what some legal scholars have called orphaned works, works that are out there, but we don't know to whom they belong. We don't know how to attribute to them or cite them. And this has led to some debate in academic circles, where you can see already, on the one side, you have Springer Nature, who has said that AI may not ever be claimed as an author or a co-author of an article published in one of our journals. On the other hand, you have academic organizations like the APA now coming up with guidelines for citing content from the generative content from large language models. So for us, really where this hits home is with our plagiarism statement and our attempts to hold the line on academic integrity. You might notice this is the NIU plagiarism statement. It looks pretty similar to the other plagiarism statements at most higher education institutions. But there are a number of problems that this document brings into the integration of large language models in our process. So just a few questions we have to answer that I don't have the answers to right now, but we're going to have to figure out. Number one, is prompting a large language model to generate content for you a form of cheating, or is it just a writing tool? Is it plagiarism to cut and paste or otherwise include LLM-generated content in your own work? And are LLMs a source that can be cited? How should they be cited? And how do we verify the citation? So this leads me then to just a few ideas and recommendations that I want to put on the table for all of you, because you're in the leadership position here for the university. So number one, we need faculty development across the board. AI can no longer be held within one or two disciplines. It is affecting every discipline, and it is affecting everything we do in the classroom and in our research. And as a result, faculty need to get up to speed. And there are many faculty who want to know. The meetings that we've had with Andrew Guzman, organized across campus, we've had a lot of questions and a lot of curiosity, but nothing to supply in response just yet. And there is a hunger to know. And as a result, we need to respond to that hunger in our faculty. Secondly, we have to think about AI education across the curriculum. We can't just do this in computer science or engineering. It has to happen in dance. It has to happen in art. It has to happen in political science. It has to happen in sociology. It can't just be in one location. So we need to begin to think about AI across the curriculum and developing a curriculum that can respond to the challenges not only of large language models, but of diffusion models and other kinds of models that are out there for generating original content. Thirdly, we are going to have to update our existing policies, and I'd say starting with the plagiarism statement is probably the best place to begin. We need a plagiarism statement and an academic integrity plan that really responds to the exigencies of large language models and helps us look forward as opposed to backwards. Finally, and this is a little bigger, we are going to need university guidelines for AI, telling our faculty, our students, and our staff what can and should be done with AI, and providing some kind of framework for understanding the opportunities, the challenges, and the best practices for employment of these tools is going to be absolutely crucial to our success. So that's what I have. Thanks.
I have to admit, it's kind of mind-boggling when you look at all of that. Are there any questions? I'm sure there are. Trustee Wasowitz.
First of all, thanks. That's really good stuff, very enlightening, and I think we're just scratching the surface on this right now. One of the things that, you know, I come from industry and business, and one of the things that we've been saying for the past 12 months or so is you should use this every day. And I know we have a license here with Microsoft, which translates into ChatGPT. By the way, you had three. We're in 4.5 now.
Yeah, that's right.
So, I mean, but using it every day, getting people exposed, I think, is such a big thing. Is that something that you're espousing? It's that people just use it. If you just use it, you'll start to get more out of it.
So I can speak for myself in my own classroom. Yeah, I want students using this and using it right away. Giving them access, but also modeling for them what kinds of best practices there are in using these tools, I think is absolutely crucial. When I go back to the beginning of my career, I came to NIU to do internet studies because the internet was brand new, right? And that's because my colleagues and our students didn't understand what the impact of the internet was going to be on higher education and on research and on their careers. We learned the internet, but there was a lot of reticence to learning the internet. We had, you know, people at that time in the mid-90s saying, well, do you think this internet's going to catch on? Do you think this is important for us to integrate in our classroom? Well, yes, it is. You know, that, and it took a while for us to get there. I think we need to do a little more proactive integration. We can't just wait for everyone to get up to speed. We have to help them get up to speed. And so if we do the same thing we did with the internet and wait 20 years for us to understand the impact of this technology on education, research, and even our service activities, I think we're going to miss an opportunity.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, and I think exposure, just using it, it really helps out a lot. I mean, I've used it at least 3 or 4 times this morning already. So.
That's how I.
While he was at the meeting. No.
Yeah.
Actually, I, and I'm being serious here. I asked him to write something about Trustee Barsima.
All right.
So I'll show you when we're done.
But not while you were driving, correct, Trustee? No.
Trustee Barsima.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Athos. The, you know, we had a discussion before about curriculum and how AI is going to change curriculum within a university and such. But I also think, I think this is just more of a statement than it is anything else, is that I think that as a university, we need to have a study group, a forum group, a steering group that is looking at how AI is going to make NIU as a campus more efficient in how we use AI efficiently outside of curriculum, you know, within our campus environment, because I think that there's going to be tremendous uses for AI to make our processes more efficient and effective and such. So I trust that we're doing that, or that we will do that. Because, you know, to the point that you made and to the point that Trustee Wasowitz just made too, is that everybody is already using it, right? So the, you know, the proverbial, you know, the horse is already running. You know, we need to make sure that it doesn't run in a direction that we don't want it to run in. And so I agree 1,000% with you. We can't wait 20 years to say, well, what's the effect of the internet going to be on us? Or what's the effect of AI going to be on us? It's already out, and so we need to make sure that we are getting it to run in the direction that we want it to, both in terms of curriculum and just in, from an operational standpoint.
I again will just comment, applaud the forethought of this issue. I'm going to date myself a little bit. When I was in high school, I used a slide rule, and then the four function came out, and then computers, and now, you know, evolving AI. These are all tools. And establishing, again, the guidelines around the use of the tools and how they're used is going to continue to evolve in this. But I want to applaud the university for the forethought. This, in my mind, is one of the key issues that society is going to face in the years to come.
I just add to that, using the tools is absolutely important. Engagement with the tools is absolutely important. But I think we also need to do some AI literacy. Mm-hmm. Students need to know how the tool works. Mm-hmm. Because when your tool is a magic object, it's in control. And the only way you take control and demystify the magic object is by having some literacy about what goes on inside the box. And so we need to help students understand what's going on inside the box. Otherwise, we're not doing our job as a higher education institution.
Are there any additional comments, Trustee Butler?
David, thank you for your wonderful presentation. So I wonder if you're seeing anything develop at this point in terms of, because I wanted to say when you first talked about the challenges, I wanted to add the concept of ideation, because I've seen this in my professional sphere where I have colleagues, particularly younger colleagues, who will turn to ChatGPT to essentially create documents and educational materials and training materials. And what I notice in them doing that is that they're not creating anything themselves. And it's taking the burden from them to do some critical thinking about what they do and what their role is, and maybe even how they might do it better as they think out those questions for their presentations. But I wonder if we're seeing any shift. So you talked about the mid-90s, and in the early 90s or so, there was the worry that hypertext might, not worry, but there was the view that hypertext capability was going to literally change the way the human being thought, their relationship with power, who the teacher is, should they be relied on, etc. Are we seeing any shift in the research? Are we seeing any shift in attitudes and ideas from students about sort of who owns the ideas that are generated by AI? So, for example, are they thinking, well, I'm the one that put in the inputs. I thought about the creative mixture of topics and questions, and then I asked for, this to come in the form of a New York mobster, right? So, So this script that I created, this would never have existed were I not the one who put all these inputs in. Are we beginning to see a shift in the way that students think about ownership of the products because they participated in its creation? And might that become a problem for us going forward as we think about student conduct cases and academic dishonesty,
right,
and so forth?
Oh, it's a really big question, but it's a really good question. So let me answer it in two ways. One historically, and then one more contemporary. Every new innovation in educational information communication technology has gone through the same kind of crisis. You think back to Plato's Phaedrus. Socrates was worried that writing was going to ruin the memory and therefore destroy civilization, right? You look at the medieval universities, and the professors would say to the students, leave the books in the hall. I'm the knowledge, source here. You cannot use books. Books are forbidden. We were worried about writing, we were worried about books, we were worried about television, we were worried about the internet. We figured these things out. But we didn't figure them out by accident. We figured them out because we made a deliberate effort to make them fit our way of thinking and working with information, ideas, and with our students. Now, with regards to student ownership over ideas and what happens in academic conduct cases, students are already involved in things that we might not recognize as creating original ideas. They're already remixing content, right? Our students are master remixers. They grab code from code libraries and they integrate it into the code they're writing for class. My kid at the University of Michigan did this because I taught him to write code. And his computer science teacher at the University of Michigan gave him an F because he did not write the code by hand. Now, that's insane, because the code is in the library is open access, open source, you should be able to cut and paste code. But there was an idea in the instructor's mind that the code has to be written originally by hand, otherwise it's not original code. So we're already in a world in which we are drawing on different resources all the time. DJs have taught us this, right, with sampling and remixing music. Artists have taught us this with collage practices, and poets have taught us this with citing and grabbing phrases from Dante and Shakespeare and reworking them. So instead of saying that this is plagiarism and that you've created a problem, we should say, no, you're learning how to be creative in the 21st century. How do we help you do that well? How do we not punish you, but how do we take what you're doing already and make it empowering so you can go somewhere? And AI is going to be the same.
So, Professor, you should have had your son go to NIU.
I should have. I should have.
And that's just crazy.
I know, it's just crazy.
You know, I'm a computer science guy. That is nuts. Mm-hmm. And it's only, and I think it's probably ego thing on that professor,
you know, I had to do it this way, I had to struggle, so therefore you struggle. I mean, that is not the right way.
Mm-hmm. We had a very long family talk about it.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions or discussions? If not, David, thank you.
Thank you.
That was really well done. And I want to thank, I think, Dr. Freeman, whoever put all this agenda together. This topic, first of all, when we did it in ESPA and now we did it here, I think from the trustee standpoint, to be at the forefront of this, the same time you're doing it with the faculty and the students, is really important to us too. So really appreciate
it. It was a
that.
Collaborative effort of Vice President Harris and Executive Vice President Provost Elish Piper and Dr. Streb. And you know, we just always try to make these meetings as informative for you as possible. So thank you.
Appreciate that.
Great discussion.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, are there any other matters requiring the attention of the board today?
I just have one thought. I mean, I was very much paying attention to Vice President Harris's talk here in the beginning about mm-hmm. all the things that mm-hmm. we've accomplished. I mean, I have a pretty good idea, but the way you put that out there, that is just amazing, the mm-hmm. amount of things that we're accomplishing right now in that area. So thank you very much for your work.
You're welcome. Second that, definitely. Any other questions, discussions? Then our next meeting date of the Research and Innovation Legal and Legislative Affairs Committee is August 22nd, 2024. May I have a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So made. Strong.
Trustee Strawn, a second?
Second.
Trustee Wasowitz. Rachel, will you please call the roll call vote?
Committee Vice Chair Athas?
Yes.
Trustee Dennis Barsima?
Yes.
Trustee John Butler?
Yes.
Board Chair Montel Gales? Trustee Tim Moore?
Yes.
Trustee Leland Strom?
Yes.
Trustee Eric Wasowitz?
Yes.
Committee Chair Veronica Harrow?
The meeting is now adjourned. This concludes the Research and Innovation Legal and Legislative Affairs Committee meeting. I've always wanted to do it.